But the Honourable Mutombi's in hospital, and I know this committee doesn't have a budget to send someone flowers or something of that nature, and I think that's not right. And I would suggest that we together somehow do a vote or something, that we do use some of our funding to at least buy a bunch of flowers for her. And I know we couldn't buy flowers even for the funeral. And I actually think there's something wrong with that, very wrong, because we've got a member of our committee that's in hospital. It's obviously serious because she's been there for a few days, and it's just terrible just to send a little note that doesn't go down with me anyway. To the extent that I'm happy to put in the money now for at least to get that done from on behalf of the committee, not on behalf of me. I don't know the Honourable Mutombi. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. I did want to also record that to a large degree throughout this process, there were just two parties present. I know that our honourable member from the EFF is here today, and he was here yesterday, and I thank him for that. But we've had a lack of attendance from the other parties, and I just thought, as you as chair, maybe if you could just maybe put your foot down at some stage to comment on that, because it's just not right. Because when we have this fight in Parliament, eventually people are going to stand up and speak, and they weren't part of the process at all. And I think we do need to mention that. And then finally, Madam Chair, and I keep harping on this, I haven't had a chance to read any of the submissions from the Department of Labour at all. So we're going to be talking in mid-air. I praise them for doing an enormous amount of work, because I've just now tried to look at how many pages it was, and it's an enormous input that they've made, and I heard that they even made some corrections today or last night on that, and I thank them for all that, but it becomes almost meaningless. Yes, well, they're here, and they're all dressed up, we must let them have their say, but it's very difficult for me to listen. And I'm a person of very small brain. I like to have read something beforehand so that I can then digest what they're saying and the nuances of it. And I must tell you, I love doing this, but I don't really like it when it's an ambush or something of that nature. It's not that they want us to vote on it and accept it and whatever that. I presume not, and I presume we'll have enough time to go away, digest, and then make our comments. But I certainly can't cross-examine that today, and I can't even question it today, because I wouldn't have read it. I come from the old school where I like to have read something, highlight it, cross it out, do my bit, and that hasn't been possible. So I do thank them for doing that enormous amount of work in a very rushed amount of time. And I have a particular problem with that. It's the same as the input from the content advisor, who does an enormous amount of work, sometimes through the night. I haven't even seen that report as yet. I don't know if it's been circulated even. But I haven't had a chance to go through that. So just again, I'd like to be able to have the content advisor's report in writing, and to be able to go through it very carefully, and to have some time. I don't know if it's been updated. I did get one report, if I may refer to it, and I don't know if it's been updated since then. I've got one called Report of the Portfolio Committee on Labour on the Workshops and Public Hearings Held on the National Minimum Wage, dated 8 March 2017, this rather thick bundle. That was before yesterday's input, and so obviously this is going to be updated, I presume, because that was before taking the input for the people who presented yesterday and after the 8th of March. So I'm not sure if that's going to, and again I make the comment a bit of a facetious one, these reports were prepared from their written submissions, not from the oral, and not from the examination of their written submissions. So unless we were all just stuffed shirts, and that cross-examination of the submissions were all irrelevant, we're just going through the motions, as it were. It's like when I want to marry someone, I first take on a date, I then take her out for dinner, and then I ask her to marry me. I that's just the motions. I know I want to get married to her. But that's not this committee. We're not just going through motions. People are here very seriously and wanting to make sure that we don't have unintended consequences, which is what I keep hearing in this fifth parliament. And I again think that this has to be updated and take into account what the comments were. So again, Madam Chair, it's all very well to say that we're going to hear the report from the content advisor, we're going to hear the report from the Department of Labor, and I do thank them. I'm not belittling the enormous amount of work, the enormity of what's actually taken place here. I'm not belittling. It's just that, again, we feel very much at sea. So thank you for listening to me on that.
Thank you, Honorable Begum. We've noted Honorable Teko and then Honorable Mashile and then Honorable Martins in that order. Is there any other hands? No, then it's fine. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Thanks. I think I can agree with Honorable Bahrim on what he's saying. But however, for the first time, I have a proposal, Chair, on the time, because we need to deal with this thing very soberly and we must have time. So with his input on this, to say he has seen that we need more time, we need to digest this thing and elaborate further, we will listen to the department today, it's okay, but I will propose that the on recess dates,
Honorable Teko, can we first just go back? You are running now and I'm still walking.
Okay.
We are still on the adoption of the agenda of us.
Okay, sure.
If we can just sort that one out, can we go back on the adoption of agenda? Can I get some input?
Can I?
Honorable Teko then?
Can I move for the adoption of the agenda, Chair?
With the inclusion of the presentation by the
content
advisor.
Yes,
do we have a second, Honorable America? You seconded. Your hand was up. You are seconding that. Yes. So the Honorable Muteka, is it on this issue? Okay.
Chairperson, I think you are wrong. You allowed Honorable Bahrain to talk. Elaborate, but now you cutting the other committee member to express herself. Equal airtime must be given to everyone.
I agree on that one. It's just a matter of Honorable Bagram knowing very well that he was out of order. I didn't call him out of order, but I allowed it because we were still on the matter of the adoption of the agenda. We are not shutting anyone down in terms of elaboration on the way forward, but we have the agenda point there. So we can rather move that agenda point from the last point and deal with it directly now and then proceed with the other matters. That's what we can do. So then we proceed, the agenda has been adopted, and we're going to go now to the issue of the way forward. It seems as if that's the bone of contention at this stage before we move into the presentations. Honorable Teko, and then Honorable Mashile, and then Honorable Martins on that issue.
No, thanks, Chair. It's clear. We are fine. We are, all of us were members of this committee. We should have seen that there's a gap there, including Honorable Bahrain. He was supposed to say, let me adopt the agenda before I continue. But however, I agree with what he's saying. And I'm proposing that we need to give this committee enough time to elaborate and to discuss this issue of a bill. Then I'm coming to a proposal to say, because today we won't have enough time, we will just be listening to the department, not to engage that thoroughly with the report. I propose that we come with a date of that week of the second week of April, I think. I think there are days there, 13... 10, I don't remember very well on that week, so that we come back. And
can you give us dates, Honorable Teko, so that we can be on par of what you are...
Two seconds, Chair. Let me open my calendar. April. I know America will be against this. April on the 10, 11, 12, those 3 days we can best utilize them dealing with this report with the department and the responses from the submission. Together we deliberate on the matter on those days. So if we give ourselves enough time, like the president requested, that we need to deal with this thing decisively, so, and the EFF was saying we are rushing, so we need to give it a time and come and sit as committee members. We must also sacrifice, honorable members. Come, we deal with this matter. We are not doing this for us. We are doing this for the people out there. So we need to come and debate these things further. All of us, we need to commit on this item. Thanks, Chair.
We have the proposal in terms of what Honorable Teko said of the week of the 10th. Remember, the next week is already a committee week. So she's just including the week of the 10th. Can we have Honorable Mashile?
Thanks, Chairperson. I do believe that the presentations that we have received, all of them are intended to empower committee members to be able to process the legislation and produce their own product. And therefore, the presentations that we are receiving today also seeks to actually add to the documentation that we are supposed to have in order to do our work. And therefore, I want to plead with the honorable member that I think we should receive these presentations today very happily. And then, seconding the motion that has been put, that we come back on that week of Tuesday, starting on the 10th, then to Thursday, then that is the opportunity that all of us would have read all the documents in front of us, all the responses that have been presented to us, to come and digest, analyze them and produce a final product. And therefore, in kind, Chairperson, I'm seconding the motion that we come, and then also that today we be favored with the presentations that are available. Whether we receive them today or yesterday, it should not matter too much, because all what's going to have is that now we'll have an opportunity of reading them for this coming week. Then when we come that other week, then we'll be prepared to actually deliberate. I thank you very much. Or just before that, I think the issue of the flower for the Honorable Mthambi, surely from the committee section, it should be possible. It should be possible from the committee section. I think from the other committees that I served, we have managed to do that by a card from the committee section, and then we get it done. Surely we can ask the committee secretary to actually go and explore that, and then it should be possible, and it should be supported. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. I've requested the committee secretary to find out in the meantime what's possible. So before we conclude the meeting, then we'll have a way forward in terms of the matter of Honorable Mthambi, but I strongly agree with the motion that's on the table. Honorable Muteka and then Honorable Martin.
On a point of footage, Madam Chair, you know, you can't agree to a motion that was...
Oh, it's the flowers that we are talking about.
Okay.
No. Did you also raise your hand before Honorable Martins? I thought I... Okay, thank you. Sorry, Honorable Muteka. I just want to finish the round of hands. I don't want us to be provoked by the inputs and then raise our hands. Honorable Begum, do you want to come in before... Okay. So it's then Honorable Muteka, then Honorable Begram, then Honorable Martins will be finishing. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think my colleague from the ANC does that. She's correct about the Russians. She's correct. Because this rush didn't only start here. It started from NEDLAC. You can check page 7 of the input from the submission from the COSAT and the rest. They are also complaining about this rushness. So I was correct. So what? And even today, Jefferson, if you can look at the agenda, the department is going to respond to the submissions because before ourselves can deal with the submissions. And again, content advisor is going to give us a report. I think the whole thing is premature. When will the committee sit on its own and go through these things, then invite the labor, before labor, content advisor, then labor. So the rashness is still there. I think it is premature, really, for the department to come and give us their response to the submissions before ourselves as committee have dealt with them.
So you are done, Honorable Begram, then?
I have a couple of comments to make. The first one being that I'm not sure even why we have to come a week during the constituency period when the next week we've got hearings. We can legitimately put it down. I mean, I'm just looking at what I've set up. I know that I've got a whole lot of appointments within my constituency. I'm not going to be cancelling them. I'm not allowing this to go ahead. I really feel strongly about it during our constituency period that we have to do it. You know full well, Madam Chair, that the week thereafter, we're legitimately sitting. So I'm not sure what the rush is. I mean, it seems almost indecent to suddenly have a week beforehand. I'm not sure where that's going to take us. I really don't understand what that's all about, other than being difficult. All I'm saying is that we have a legitimate period the week thereafter. Let's use that properly, and let's do it properly. Because you seem to be very much, as a party, supporting this going at tangents in the wrong time, and I have enormous difficulty with it. I think what you will find is that you'll find the ANC sitting around the table talking to themselves and literally playing with themselves, because I'm not sure where that's going to take us. That's my first comment on it. The second comment on it is that we obviously going to have a redraft of the legislation, and then we're going to have comments on the redrafted legislation. Already, if you had to look just at the public service input on it, they've picked out technicalities that record that you have to have a redraft. Some of the sections were referring to something that didn't exist. So I'm not sure where that's going to take us. And so we're going to go through the whole thing again. We'll have lots of comments on the bill as it is, and then we'll have it redrafted and have lots of comments again on the bill that it is then. I don't think so. And I have also a very strong feeling that someone has to report back to NEDLAC and to say, guys, you had a lovely talk shop for 2 years, but we didn't follow you. And do you want to comment on that? Because otherwise we're making a mockery of NEDLAC as well. And then we need to take into account what the department itself says in terms of the CCMA's input. They've made some enormous input as well, also a lot of a technical nature.
Honorable Begram, I don't want to stop you at this stage.
Thanks.
But what we should remember, we've requested during the oral submissions, the department has been with us throughout, and we've asked them to take note of all the concerns that were raised. So I don't want you to repeat what has been done in the oral submissions by submission by submission, because I'm sure whilst they were there, they were taking notes. Can we allow them to respond? And if there's areas that they don't cover, then we can raise that areas. But I think it's unfortunate or it's a bit unfair if we raise things they, as if they're not going to respond to it. Can we raise it after they respond and then fill in the gaps if the needs be for them to further respond to that issues? You may proceed.
Well, we are addressing the issue of time, and also I don't see a redraft of bill in front of me. Maybe you've got one, but I don't have it. So that was the real question. But we're certainly addressing the issue of time. I'm not sure why we have to go and upset the constituency period by 1 week when we're meeting the week thereafter.
Thank you for that, Honourable Begram. Honourable Martins.
Chair, I'm grappling with the issue of process. At one stage, we do have to get the input by the content advisor. And it will be necessary for the members of the portfolio committee to deliberate in regard to all submissions received so that they express their views. And then it will be necessary for the department to respond and give its input to the views articulated by stakeholders and members of the portfolio committee. And then after that process, I speak under correction. Then there will be a draft update of the existent legislation, which has to be presented to members of the portfolio. Then there will be deliberations in regard to that. And then after that, another bill, B1 or whatever you call it, will be prepared so that, again, the portfolio committee has to deliberate over it. And then finally, it goes to Parliament for debate.
Thank you, Honourable Martins. You want to? You raised your hand, Honourable Mashile.
I did really raise my hand, Chair. You know, you see, I was almost on the same line as what Honourable Martins has said, is that, you see, it should be really understood that we must receive all the presentations. And the presentations, they have raised certain issues on the bill. And it is important that the department must give answers or responses to those issues that have been raised. And in doing so, empowers us that when we have now an opportunity to deliberate among ourselves, this week we are proposing, we won't be having all these interested parties. We are going to deliberate among ourselves. But the people that has to actually give us that empowerment should do it now. That is the process that one understands, that when we do that deliberations, then we more or less something like an A list or whatever is going to be produced that on the areas that we think amendments need to be done. And then we'll discuss that together with the department again and finalize this particular process. I think that is just what must be understood on in terms of the process that we are handling this particular matter. So, Chair, the issue that when we come back a week after the week of the 10th, we will be sitting. I'm sure honorable members should be knowing that when we come back, then we are going to start chasing the program of the APPs. I think it should be known as well that we're not just going to come and have all the time for this. We still have to deal with the APP and the budget process. So it is important that we create space for ourselves to deal with this, if we are seriously honest. Thank you very much.
Honorable Moteka, Honorable America.
Chairperson, we have said it loudly yesterday. We're not going to agree with any interference to our constituency period. When we come back for the second term, we can then continue. Any date suggested that we must come back and leave our constituency work there and come back here is rejected. And then the issue of deadlines. You know, deadlines are not from heaven. They've been made by people, and then we are people. This thing, the Department of Labor is here to respond. But will they be able to respond to the unresolved issues from NEDLAC? Because they are not NEDLAC. So that's why I'm saying everything was rushed. This, the whole thing must be redrafted and be sent back to NEDLAC.
Honorable America.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. I certainly agree with Honorable Martens and Ms. Sheila in terms of process. We don't have any problem with process. We'll be supported, but we do have, and as my colleagues in the opposition has expressed, we have a problem that we cannot meet at the date suggested by the ANC. And if so be it, the committee decides otherwise, there's just nothing we can do because we don't have the numbers to influence change in that. We are available from the 17 onwards. You know, we are mindful of other pressing commitments that we need to do during that time, but that's just the nature of the job, and we simply just have to do it. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable America. Honorable Bagram.
Can I just second what the Honorable Martins had to say? Let's go through what he's outlined. We capture that properly, and then let's follow it carefully. If we're going to miss 1 week because people don't want to do constituency work, they'd rather come here, I think that would be very wrong. And I think what you'll be doing is you'll leave half your committee behind, who won't be here. I strongly believe that if we follow what the Honorable Martin said, it will actually shorten the period greatly, because what we'll have is we'll have a structure, a proper structure. Instead of saying, let's wait and see, let's put a proper structure to this. And my understanding of what the Honorable Martin said is that we will deliberate as a committee. Well, he'll outline it. I don't want to second guess him, but he'll outline it as to how it should be done. And then let's do it properly. Yes, the department is here, and yes, they have done a response. It can't be the response, because I presume they're going to be responding again and again. And in fact, they're probably going to be redrafting the legislation. And then, yes, once they've redrafted, we've got to come back and debate it. We don't have to call for public comment, but I would suggest very strongly that we do send it to NEDLAC for them to have a meeting on it. I would suggest that, because that's why they're there. They're there to actually debate these issues. And they have better expertise than most South Africans to debate that. So thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bagram. I've listened to everyone present. And I've also listened to the concerns that were raised, which are valid concerns indeed to me. But they're strong views expressed by the ANC as the majority party with their numbers as well as with the opposition. And I don't see it fit or the need to steamroll anyone at this stage. We don't need it because we need to be united in moving forward. That's my main objective. So I think that I'm not going to put this matter to a vote in this committee because it's clear the view of the ANC will then be it will be the majority view. I'll rather refer this matter to the principles of Parliament because this is a parliamentary process. I'll refer it to the principles of Parliament, seeing that it's our last meeting before the recess, and members will be informed accordingly of the outcome of this decision by Parliament. And then we'll just request the staff members through the secretary. As usual, we know that they are communicating with us very effectively throughout, so we know that they'll also communicate in this regard to all the members that's affected in terms of this decision. So I would therefore like to close this matter at this stage in terms of the way forward. Now I want to give, as Honorable Martens and other members did indicate, it's not going to be the last engagement with the department on this issue, because as they would outline their responses, we will make our notes and we won't be happy and we'll send them back throughout, up and down, up and down. It's going to be a continuous process, taking into consideration that they've been with us from the start and they'll be with us until we conclude this matter. So we have that commitment from their side. So at this stage, I'll give over to the content advisor to outline to us the issues clause by clause, issues of contention that has been raised, especially in the oral presentations. And then we give, after that, we give the opportunity to the department to respond on that issues, but also in terms of other issues that they see necessary, that's especially a bone of contention in the bills that has been drafted. And from there, we'll give over to the members not to deliberate on those issues, but to add if they think that there's some issues that were left behind that they need a response from the department. But then we don't allow them to respond on that issues, but they're just adding that for them to respond later on. They can even respond to us in a written form so that we can receive it before or during our recess period, and then we move forward. Can we have that direction then? So in terms of moving forward, we give over to the content advisor to lead us in terms of the key summaries. Thank you very much, members. We all have the submissions in front of us, ne? The document, dated 23rd March. Do we all have it? Okay. Dated 23rd March, the Labour Law Reform Summary of Oral Submissions from the Content Advisor. Portia, do we have it? Okay, then we can move forward.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Members, the Department, colleagues, and our guests. Firstly, this is a summary of oral submissions. The summary of written submissions was already tabled before the committee, and if the members require electronic copies, then I will forward electronic copies. And the other report that Honorable Bagrim referred to is the report that was compiled before the bills were tabled before the committee. So it was reports of the workshops that were conducted and the public hearings that we went on nationally. So I don't think that one needs to be updated. It's a separate report. It doesn't have anything to do with this report that we have now after the tabling of the bills. So this summary is on clause by clause, starting from clause one, start from the national minimum wage. On clause one, which deals with definitions. The employer is defined as, the employer means any person who is obliged to pay a worker for the work that the worker performs for that person. So Forestry South Africa submitted that this definition does not cater for an employer whose workers perform work for people other than him or herself. This will relate to, for example, employers classified as labor brokers or contractors. So they recommended that the definition be amended to take into account the above situation by changing the wording to read as follows. Any person who is obliged to pay a worker for the work that the worker performed for that or any other person, so, or any other, must be added in the definition so as to cater for contractors. And then the other definition that concerned was raised over was the definition of a worker. The worker is defined as, the worker means an employee as defined in Section 1 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Labor federations, including COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU, were of the view that this definition excludes independent contractors, despite the agreement reached at NEDLAC and captured in the NEDLAC report, paragraph 4.1.2. This proposal or this view was supported by the Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group of the University of Cape Town. And then clause 2 deals with purpose of the Act. Forestry South Africa recommended that subclause E, which is supporting economic policy, be deleted from clause 2. So the reason they proffered for that was that the extension of collective bargaining agreements to third parties has been a cause of significant yet avoidable job losses in a number of industries. The textile industry cited as a case in point. And then clause 3 looks at the application of the Act. Clause 3 reads as follows. This Act applies to all workers and their employers except members of South African National Defense Force, the National Intelligence Agency, and the South African Secret Services. The fishing industry, represented by Fishers South Africa, SAFIO, AFIO, SAFIO, Bargaining Council, and CSA, these are fishing industry organizations, submitted that the absence of any reference to workers who are working at sea, whose work is regulated by Merchant Shipping Act of 57 of 1951 and Merchant Shipping Regulations of 2013, is in itself the intended application of this bill is not in its current form geared towards or suited to those persons employed on vessels at sea. So basically the argument is that this act does not apply to those people employed to work on vessels at sea. So they recommend that any intention to apply a national minimum wage to seafarers should be written within the legal framework applicable to seafarers. And then clause 4 of the minimum wage bill deals with the national minimum wage. Subclause 4.6 reads as follows. It is unfair labor practice for an employer to unilaterally alter wages, hours of work, or other conditions of employment in connection with the implementation of the national minimum wage. And sections 193, 194, and 195 of the Labor Relations Act applies unless the context indicates otherwise. So the Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group of University of Cape Town is of the view that by making the unilateral alterings of wages, hours of work, and other conditions of employment in relation to the introduction of the national minimum wage an unfair labor practice, it removes the right in such situations for the employers to strike, Section 64.4 of the Labor Relations Act specifically provides for employees to pursue strike action over an employer's unilateral altering of conditions of employment. And Section 191, 193, 194, and 195 of the LRA provides that bargaining councils may hear unfair labor practice disputes within their jurisdiction. And bargaining councils have the same jurisdiction in respect of LRA Section 64.4 disputes. However, this is at odds with the amended Section 64.1DA of the BCE Amendment Bill, which grants CCMA exclusive jurisdiction to hear disputes regarding non-compliance with the national minimum wage. So, according to them, these clauses will create confusion and they should be made clear through an explicit link to Section 34 and 34A of the BCEA, what deductions are not permitted and what are permitted. This can be done simply by Sections 34 and 34A in Clause 4.7 or in Clause 5. So, and Subsection 4.7 reads as follows. Section 32 and 33 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act apply to the payment of the national minimum wage to workers. The Institute for Economic Justice proposed the insertion of the provision that states no wages or conditions of work prescribed by sectoral determination or bargaining council agreement of private contracts which are more favorable than the national minimum wage may be decreased after or in anticipation of the introduction of the national minimum wage. So the National Minimum Wage Commission should review after the first year whether the hourly provision is being abused and whether a weekly or monthly national minimum wage should be introduced in addition to the hourly national minimum wage as practiced in some countries. So that is the other proposal from the Institute of Economic Justice. And then on Clause 5, which is a calculation of wage, Forestry South Africa submitted that Clause 5.1 should be amended or alternatively a new clause added to allow for deductions to continue to be made in line with the provisions and criteria included in sectoral determination. And the Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group of UCT and the Labor Federations also share a similar view. Subsection 2 of Clause 5, which reads as follows, a worker is entitled to receive the national minimum wage for the number of hours that the worker works on any duty. So the suggestion was that Subsection 2 can be read as directly contradicting to BCEA Amendment Bill, thereby defeating its intention that workers are paid the minimum of 4 hours so as to cover travel and related costs. Clause 5.2 should be made subject to Section 9A of the BCE Amendment Bill, and Section 5.3 should be amended accordingly. There were no comments for Clause 6, which relates to annual review. And then Clause 7 deals with the conduct of annual review. Forestry South Africa proposed that Clause 7A include another subsection, which is Subsection 4, which must be job creation, along with, given the circumstances, prevention of job losses. Clause 7 reads as follows. For the purpose of conducting an annual review and recommending adjustments, the Commission must promote, one, the The medium temperature gets referred to in section 11D, the alleviation of poverty, and 3, reduce the reduction of wage differentials and inequality. So the proposal is to add subsection 4 as stated, which is job creation along with given circumstances, prevention of job losses. And the Labour Federation's proposed the inclusion of subsection 4 as follows: progressive improvement in the real value of the national minimum wage. The Labour Federation's further suggested the inclusion under subsection 7B of the following: the minimum living levels which quantify the basic needs of workers and their families and the health and safety of welfare workers. So section 7B is the section, it is a subsection that deals with what the commission needs to be considered when reviewing the annual minimum wage. And then on clause 8, which is the establishment of the commission, COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU proposed the addition of the following. Section 8 reads as follows: the National Minimum Wage Commission is hereby established. So they propose that it must read as follows: the National Minimum Wage is hereby established and takes over the functions of the Employment Conditions Commission. And then clause 9 deals with the composition of the commission. Forestry South Africa suggested that it is crucial that the voice of the unemployed be heard through their participation in the National Minimum Wage Commission. And then clause 10 deals with the appointment and termination of appointment of members of commission. There were no comments on that clause. And then I go to clause 11, which is the functions of the commission. Forestry SA proposed that clause 11B be reworded as follows. Okay, let me first read clause B as it currently is. It states the function of the commission are to investigate and report annually to the minister on the impact of the national minimum wage on the economy, collective bargaining, and the reduction of income differentials. So the proposal is that it should read as follows: investigate and report annually to the minister on the impact of the national minimum wage on the economy, including levels of employment, collective bargaining, and the reduction in income differentials. Therefore, what is proposed to be added there is the is including levels of employment. And then VAT's National Minimum Wage Research Initiative suggested that 11D should read as follows: set minimum, the functions of the commission are to set medium term targets for the level and or other dimensions of the targets of the national minimum wage to be reached within 3 years of the establishment of the commission. And COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU also made a proposal to this subsection. They say it should be amended with the deletion of the part within 3 years and the addition of the following at the end of the subsection. Within 1 year, which will stipulate the level which the national minimum wage must achieve within 3 to 5 years of its introduction. The medium-term target should take into account appropriate benchmarks and relevant ILO instruments. So the proposal is that that is added after subsection 11E. So this National Minimum Wage Research Institute, no research initiative, also recommended that the commission be given direct authority over the 7 plant employees of the secretariat. Kosatu Fedusa and Natu share the similar sentiment on that point. Furthermore, this National Minimum Wage Research Initiative recommended that the commission should develop necessary expertise in-house and under their direct authority to undertake research, and that sufficient resources be provided to do so. This research can interface with other work of the department and have a potentially positive departmental impact. And then the UCT Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group submitted that 11C and subsection 11E only makes sense if the appropriate amendments are made to section 27 of the Employment Equity Act. COSATU, FEDUSA and NACTO proposed that clause 11 should further be amended to assign functions of oversight over sectoral determinations to the National Minimum Wage Commission. There were no comments on clause D, which is conduct of meetings of the commission. Clause 13 deal with the secretariat of the commission. Forestry South Africa proposed that clause 13C be reworded as follows. Okay, currently 13C read as follows. Subject to the laws governing the public service, the minister must provide the commission with a secretariat to perform the following functions. C, the monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the national minimum wage on the economy and a reduction of income differentials. So the proposal is that the monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the national minimum wage on the economy, including levels of employment, collective bargaining, and the reduction of income differentials. So the addition there is including levels of employment, collective bargaining, level of employment and collective bargaining. Clause 15 of the bill deals with exemptions. Forestry South Africa recommended that exemptions be made easy to acquire through allowing not only registered employers organizations to apply for exemptions on behalf of their respective members or particular groups of them, but through changes to the regulations allowing representative bodies such as Forestry South Africa, who are not such registered organizations, to do so specifically in relation to a group or groups of their members through a blanket exemption mechanism. While on the other hand, WIRT's National Minimum Wage Research Initiative proposed that clause 15.1, which allows registered employers, organizations to apply for exemptions on behalf of their members, be removed. UCT Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group submitted that only individual employers should be permitted to make exemption applications from the national minimum wage, or alternatively, that an employer's organization may make applications on behalf or together with individual employers. They recommended that the basic framework for exemptions outlined in Section 50 of the BCEA, in particular subsection 1B, and related provisions be replicated in the National Minimum Wage Bill. Furthermore, they propose that the bill must make provision for the department to supply the National Minimum Wage Commission on a regular basis with data regarding exemptions, that is, applications made, exemptions granted, exemptions rejected, and exemptions partially granted. COSATU, FEDUSA, and NATU propose that clause 15.1 be removed and instead a provision be made to allow low-wage bargaining councils to apply for a phase-in to the national minimum wage. Furthermore, they propose that the exemption system that will be introduced not be too lenient and be reviewed every 12 months by the National Minimum Wage Commission, and to include the exemption regulations and the decision process whether to grant an exemption or not. They recommended a detailed review of companies that received exemptions be made available. And then clause 16 deals with the regulations. WITS National Minimum Wage Research Initiative recommended that the minister be instructed under clause 16, sub clause 16.1, to provide regulation on the collation and public dissemination of relevant statistics relating to exemptions applied for and granted. And COSATU, FEDUSA, NATU propose that an addition be made in clause 16.1a as follows: requirements for employers to submit financial statements in support of their applications. Institute for Economic Justice proposed that the minister must table draft regulations at NEDLAC. There were no comments on clause 17. And that those were all the oral submissions on the National Minimum Wage Bill. And then on the Basic Conditions of Employment Amendment Bill, clause 3 of the BCE Amendment Bill, which deals with the insertion of Section 9A in the Act, keeps submitted that employees earning the minimum wage or above should not be covered by this clause. And COSATU, FEDUSA, and NATU proposed the insertion of Section 9A3 as follows: the minimum daily payment for hours worked will be subject to the investigation to be conducted by the National Minimum Wage Commission as set out in Section 17 of the National Minimum Wage Act. And then clause 4, which repeals chapters 8 and 9, UCT Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group is of the view that repeal of chapters 8 and 9 of the BCEA and the transitional provisions in respect of sectoral determinations means that there will no longer be a procedure to introduce sectoral determinations or to review existing sectoral determinations, given that the National Minimum Wage Commission has not been given powers in this regard. Further, they are of the view that it appears as if the minimum wages in sectoral determinations will increase proportionately with the national minimum wage for only 3 years, and thereafter, the wages will not increase and will increasingly become irrelevant. The above mentioned view is in line with that of COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU, which propose that aspects of chapters 8 and 9 be retained and amended to give powers to the National Minimum Wage Commission to amend sectoral determinations. And the Casual Workers Advice Office was of the view that the proposed doing away with sectoral determinations can once again only be interpreted as placing the interest of employers' profit making above the needs of low earning workers. They recommended that the Minister of Labour's rights to make sectoral determinations be retained. And then clause 6 deals with amendment to section 64 of Act 75 of 1997. UCT Research Group is of the view that this amendment creates an anomaly in that bargaining council agents will likely to be the ones to identify non-compliance, but only the department inspectors may institute proceedings against the non-compliant employers, and only CCMA has jurisdiction to hear these disputes. So CWAO asserted that the proposed shifting of responsibility for enforcement of a national minimum wage onto the CCMA will undermine the CCMA's ability to perform its current task. And then clause 8 of the BCEA deals with amendment of section 68. UCT found it anomalous that an undertaking or compliance can be made an arbitration award without there being a hearing. And then on clause 16, which deals with the insertion of section 76A, COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU recommended as follows. They recommended the addition of escalating fines, criminal charges for contravening the section four or more times within a specified time period, failure to pay the national minimum wage on more than one occasion disqualifies the employer from state contracts or incentives, and a register of repeat offenders be published. Companies that obtained exemptions through providing false information be penalized through cancellation of exemptions and to pay a fine, but importantly, also refund their workers for the underpayment that took place. And then those were the oral submissions on the BCE Amendment Bill. And then submissions on the Labor Relations Amendment Bill. On Clause 1, which is amendment of Section 32 of the Act, Free Market Foundation is of the view that the proposed wording of this clause is certain to cause confusion, as it is seemingly contradicting the current Section 32.5 of the LRA. Section 32.5 of the LRA reads as follows. Despite subsection 3B and C, the minister may extend a collective agreement in terms of subsection 2. And then there are conditions there, A, B, C, D, yeah, and then there's 5E. So it deals with the extension of collective agreements. Clause 2, in section of section 32A in the Act, Free Market Foundation is of the view that in section of 32A infringes on, amongst others, the constitutional and collective principles of majoritarianism and the voluntary nature of collective bargaining. Okay, section 32A, which deals with the renewal and extension of funding agreements, reads as follows. For the purposes of this section, a funding agreement means a collective agreement concluded in a bargaining council, including a provision in such an agreement to fund the operational and administrative activities of the bargaining council itself, dispute resolution fund referred to in section 28.1e, 3, a training and education scheme completed in section 28.1f, or 4, a pension, provident, medical aid, sick pay, holiday and unemployment scheme, any other similar scheme for the benefit of one or more parties to bargaining council or its members as contemplated in section 28.1g. So Freedom Market Foundation has also viewed that the inspection of this subsection infringes on the constitutional and collective bargaining principles of majoritarianism and the voluntary nature of collective bargaining. And then clause 3 deals with the amendment of section 49. UCT A research group submitted that it is anomalous that only the representatives of employers' organizations are referred to in this clause. Furthermore, they point out that section 32.5A and 49.4A refer to each other for authority and neither provide criteria for the determination of representativeness. They found this confusing and opening the issue of determining representativeness to challenge. Clause 4 deals with the amendment to Section 69 of the Act. Casual Workers Advice Office recommended that the proposed amendments on the strike ballot, default picketing rules, extended conciliation, and advisory arbitration be scrapped. Furthermore, that the LRA be amended to prevent employers from using scarce labor during protected strikes. They also proposed the reinstating into the LRA of the rights of workers to strike over disputes of rights. NOMSA is of the view that the introduction of balloting before a strike is nothing else but an imposition of the limitation of the right to strike. And then clause 13 deals with the amendment of section 127. The PSCPC submitted that this amendment may be contrary to the provision of the powers and functions of a bargaining council as listed in section 28 of the Act. By interpretation, bargaining councils do not have to seek accreditation from the governing body as contemplated in proposed amendments to section 127 for disputes of those parties as defined in Section 51 of the Act. They asserted that it is accepted that accreditation is only required for those disputes where one of the parties may not be a party to a bargaining council, commonly referred to as non-party disputes. Therefore, bargaining councils, in terms of their constitutions, read with the provisions of the Act, allow for the appointment of a panel of conciliators and arbitrators to resolve disputes that may arise between parties to the council. The Constitution provides for its own criteria, skills level, and representativeness of such panel. It also provides for a code of conduct for which these panelists must adhere to. The constitution of a bargaining council, the dispute resolution procedure, the rules governing dispute process, and the panel of dispute resolvers are agreed to by parties in the council through a collective agreement. The application of Section 23 of the Act on the legal effects of collective agreements must also be read in relation to the proposed amendments. The discretion and the right to appoint a panel of conciliators and arbitrators for council disputes and indirectly accrediting those persons to perform such functions is solely that of the council. It cannot be by decision of the governing body. The proposed amendment to Section 127 as currently worded, it is submitted, does not specifically address the issue of accreditation for the type of disputes, that is, party-to-party disputes or non-party disputes. This lack of clarification clouds the interpretation of the proposed amendment. This submission was supported by CAPES. Also, Tokiso supported this submission and further submitted that the proposed amendment to Section 127 are contrary to the objectives of the LRA and will undermine collective bargaining, negatively impact on bargaining councils and private agencies, undermine the growth of skills in the marketplace, and create an unnecessary burden on the CCMA. And Clause 15 deals with amendment of Section 135. As the Act currently reads in Section 135.2, parties have the right to agree to extend the 30-day period. PSCBC proposed that this should remain the rights of the parties as they will know best and unreasonable interference by administrative action should be refuted. Further, it is proposed that Section 29A be deleted in its entirety. The provision in the memorandum that no extension are permitted where the state is the employer, it is submitted, cannot be correct as a blanket provision. Extensions are provided for in terms of the dispute resolution procedure and rules of those bargaining councils where the state is the employer. And then a clause 16 deals with the insertion of sections 150A, 150B, 150C, and 150D. PSCBC submitted that the request for advisory arbitration must be based on the principle of majority party. It recommended that the clause be amended to reflect the following: Section 150A, 19A to read as follows: on the director's own accord or on application of one of the parties to the dispute, in the case of a labor party requesting facilitation, such request must have the agreement of the majority of Labour parties to the dispute. And section 150C, in brackets 3, refers to the publication of the award in terms of section 6 instead of referring to subsection 7. Further, it is not clear how the insertion of sections 150A to D will be applicable to the state. The amendment bill in section 150D refers to the binding effect of an advisory award if one of the parties is an employer organization. The state, it is asserted, is not an employer organization, and or the state should be specifically referred to or rather excluded. Furthermore, the PSAPC proposed that there should be a broader consideration of the implication of the process of an advisory award read with the provisions of the LRA specifically referring disputes within essential services within the state to Parliament for endorsement. Consideration should also be given to the powers and functions of the Minister for Public Service and Administration in determining conditions of service for the public service and how an advisory award published may impact on the same. That was the summary on the Labor Relations Amendment Bill. Thank you.
Thank you to the content advisor. We're going to give over. Is there any comments on this or anything that you feel is left out? I'm noting hands. Honorable Begram.
Thank you. I'd like to, in due course, populate it with all the things that were left out. I will come back on it. I can't tell you now. I'll go back to all the inputs. This seems pretty thin to me. A few spring to mind. He has concentrated on forestry and the trade unions, but I will populate it in due course. Thank you.
Okay. We'll request you to just note it down. Honorable Muteka and then Honorable Mashile.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there's a lot of reading to be done so that we can know where we're going. And I'm also proposing just a small break, because then we can come back.
Honorable Mashile?
No, you read my mind.
It's agreed, honorable members. We have a 5-minute comfort break. Then we'll come back for the presentation by the department. We'll be back at 5 past 11. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know if she's got extra. I'll just grab the one on the end over there.
They forgot to send it to me electronically.
Document that we're missing. Did you?
Which one?
Apparently, this one is going to be.
So you mean the schedule of the merge?
Yeah, this one is from Labour. This one.
Yeah, no, I got that. Yeah.
You got
that. Yeah.
But there's another one.
Yes.
I think that's the one that we.
She showed it to me. I had to. It's fine, thanks.
From which organization?
I was with Kasatu until last September. I was coordinating the negotiations for Labour. Now I'm with the Institute for Economic Justice. No, I'm not. I'm a Bush lawyer. Bush economist.
Okay.
And yourself, where are you from?
From the Parliamentary Monitoring
Office. Kindred. Okay.
So how long were you with Kosatu?
28 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
A long time.
And you moved because...
it was time to move on.
It was time to move on, yeah.
It was time to move on a long time ago.
The 5 minutes is finished now. It's been dragged and dragged, so we'll give over to the department DG.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chairperson and the honorable members. Trying to get the presentation ready. Chairperson, would like to take this opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to respond to the oral and written comments made by members of the public, trade unions and trade unions federations, employers and employer organizations. Honorable Chairperson and members, I would like from the onset indicate that this is by no means our final response to issues raised by interested parties. We will, as the process unfolds, provide the committee with our comprehensive response to all the issues raised. At the time of preparing this response, the department had available to it 50 submissions commenting on the 3 bills that were submitted to the Parliament by the department. In November 2017. At the time of submitting the bills to Parliament, the Department also published the bills for public comments, and at the time of the deadline for the submission of comments to the Department on the 10th of January 2018, the Department had received comments from 39 individuals and organizations. Of these, 16 also submitted comments to the Portfolio Committee. The public interest in these bills, and in particular in the proposed National Minimum Wage Bill, has been significant. The current responses should, however, be viewed in the context of the engagement between government, organized business, organized labor, and the community constituencies that began in 2015 and resulted in the conclusion of a declaration on wage inequality and labor market stability, and the signing of an agreement on the introduction of a national minimum wage, and an accord on collective bargaining and industrial action in February 2017. Further comment on the process leading to the submission of the bills to Parliament will be provided below. The response that the department would like to provide will be grouped according to each of the bills, starting with the National Minimum Wage Bill. Responses to the public comment on each of the bills will begin with a general comment on the policy objectives contained in the bills. The policy objectives are important in setting out what is it that the bill seeks to achieve and what its limitations are. A number of the submissions have commented that the policy and legislative objectives were not clear to them, and this is especially true with regard to the proposed deletion of chapters of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. While the policy objectives were clearly spelled out during the NEDLAC process of engagement, it has been difficult to clarify all aspects in the bills and the accompanying memoranda of objects to the public at large. Some of the comments submitted go beyond the objectives of the bills, and these comments will not be responded to in each case. Before responding to submissions made on the bills, it may be useful to provide a short overview of the process that led to the submission of the bills to Parliament. This overview is intended to provide a context for assessing the outcomes of the NEDLAC engagement process, clarifying certain aspects of the process itself, and addressing the extent to which engagement of the bills have complied with the NEDLAC protocol. If you look at the process of engagement on the labor bills, the origins of the process lie in the call made by the President, by President Zuma in his State of the Nation address on 17 June 2014 for social partners to deliberate on the state of the labor relations environment, and in particular to address low wages, wage inequality, and violent and protracted strikes. This call led to the convening of a labor relations indaba held on the 4th of November 2014 that gave rise to the Ekurhuleni Declaration. The indaba was the launch of a process of engagement that was, through the establishment of the task teams, aimed at addressing the challenges considered during the indaba and captured as the broad principles in the declaration. In January 2015, two task teams were constituted under the auspices of NEDLAC and began engagement on labor market stability and wage inequality and the national minimum wage. These were the Labor Relations Technical Task Team and the Wage Inequality Technical Task Team. The work of the task teams was overseen and guided by a committee of principals that was chaired by the then Deputy President, Cyril Ramaphosa. The work of all the committees has been documented by NEDLAC and by a senior commissioner of the CCMA who facilitated the work of the task teams and reported to the committee of principals. In brief, progress in the NEDLAC engagements over the period January 2015 to September 2017 was as follows. The Labor Relations Technical Task Team concluded its work in September 2016, having agreed to the following outcomes: a code of good practice on collective bargaining, industrial action, and picketing. The code is intended to provide practical guidelines on collective bargaining, the resolution of disputes of mutual interest, and conduct of industrial action. An accord on collective bargaining and industrial action, which is intended to obtain commitment by the parties to take steps to prevent violence, intimidation, and damage to property, and to improve the capacity of the social partners and other agencies to resolve disputes peacefully and expeditiously. Amendments to the Labor Relations Act, these will be dealt with further below. The Wage Inequality Technical Task Team reached deadlock in April, May 2016 on the appropriate level for the first minimum wage and other factors. The Wage Inequality Technical Task Team had reached consensus on a number of aspects of the national minimum wage, including the definition of the national minimum wage, its application, and the calculation of the national minimum wage. At the meeting of the Committee of Principals in June 2016, the then Deputy President announced his intention to establish a special advisory panel to make recommendations on inter alia the level of the national minimum wage. The panel engaged with all social partners and produced its report during the November 2016. The Committee of Principals met again in early December 2016 and February 2017 to conclude agreements on labor market stability and the national minimum wage. These meetings laid the basis for the declaration that was issued after a meeting of the 7th February 2017, and we've annexed to this as Annexure A, Chairperson, together with an agreement on the introduction of a national minimum wage, which we have submitted as Annexure B, and the signing of an accord on collective bargaining and industrial action, which we have annexed as C. At this point, COSATU did not sign the various documents, having requested more time to consult its Central Executive Committee. Between February and May 2017, the department drafted the National Minimum Wage Bill and the Basic Conditions of Employment Amendment Bill. As soon as these were ready, the bills were tabled in NEDLAC for consideration by the Wage Inequality Technical Task Team, then referred to as the National Minimum Wage and BCA Task Teams. So the assertion, Chairperson and honorable members, that these bills were never discussed at NEDLAC is not correct. The initial position of government in the task team was to proceed in the usual manner to consider the bills on a line-by-line basis. This was objected to by Labour, who proposed an engagement on the basis of thematic areas, which was the approach finally agreed to. The NEDLAC report contains the details relating to the work of the task teams and the final areas of agreement and disagreement. It is worth noting that no principal areas of disagreement are recorded in the final NEDLAC report, although the report acknowledges that the NEDLAC parties may continue to advocate their views in relation to areas of interpretation that may require input during the public consultation process. The department is of the view that the process of engagement leading up to the tabling of the bills in Parliament has been comprehensive and has resulted in significant outcomes that could, if properly implemented, have important consequences for the South African labour market. The process has been in line with the NEDLAC protocol and has benefited from the oversight role played by the Committee of Principals and in particular the leadership provided by the then Deputy President. It is also worth noting that the department has conducted a series of public information sessions on the labour law amendments starting in February 2017 when stakeholders affected by sectoral determinations were briefed on the proposed national minimum wage and the modalities for its implementation. A series of national information sessions were then conducted aimed at trade unions between November 2017 and February 2018, and there is currently a national roadshow in progress to brief employers about the exemption process in relation to the national minimum wage. Throughout the period of the engagement in NEDLAC, through to the final tabling of the bills in Parliament, all bargaining councils and the parties to the councils have been kept abreast of developments. This process included one-on-one meetings between officials of the department and representatives of parties to each bargaining council. Now, Chairperson, I will deal with the National Minimum Wage Bill and its policy objectives. The main objective of the National Minimum Wage should be to improve the wages and productivity of the lowest paid members of the workforce. These are workers that are not unionized and who have limited resources to improve their conditions of work and their earnings. The first objective of a national minimum wage is therefore to improve the wages of the lowest paid workers in the labor market. The second and related objective is to reduce poverty among workers. It is well established that in South Africa, access to wage, income, and poverty go hand in hand. The average size of a household in South Africa is 3.3 persons, but this differs depending on the level of income. In poorer households with an average monthly income of 1,671 rands per month, household size is closer to 5 persons, whereas in a household earning an average monthly income of 24,000 rands, the household size is closer to 2 persons. Improved earnings for poorer households will reduce poverty and contribute to improved capabilities among the poorer members of society. But reducing poverty amongst workers does not mean that there must be a living wage. A national minimum wage will impact on poverty through lifting the wages of a low-paid workers, but not to the extent of increasing it to the level of a living wage. Clearly, a living wage will be preferable, but this is not a level that can be set through legislation. A living wage and a national minimum wage are two quite separate concepts and instruments. The South African Constitution recognizes the right to collective bargaining and freedom of association. Close to 30% of people in employment belong to trade unions and are covered by collective bargaining arrangements. This is reasonably high by international standards and bears testimony to the long history and tradition of trade unionism and collective bargaining in South Africa. An important and third objective of wage policy must be to promote collective bargaining and not to undermine it. Through collective bargaining, employers and trade unions are able to regulate wages and conditions of employment in a manner appropriate to their conditions. There is therefore an important relationship between minimum wage setting, including the national minimum wage, and bargained wages. A final objective of a national minimum wage is to support employment policy. Increasing employment and labor market participation is a critical goal in the National Development Plan, as is the creation of more and decent jobs. Employment growth is unlikely to be achieved if the labor force is divided between small, well-trained, well-paid, and unionized segments and other labor market segments where labor is underutilized, denied access to wage levels sufficient to ensure adequate standards of work efficiency. A national minimum wage will therefore have to strike a balance between incentivizing efficient utilization of human resources on the one hand and minimizing the risk of significant job losses on the other hand. Two further issues are worth noting, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The one relates to the risk of job losses that may accompany the introduction of the national minimum wage. The department is of the view that the international empirical evidence is mixed on the issue, but on balance, most commentators suggest that job losses have not been particularly high in countries that have introduced a national minimum wage. In South Africa, the minimum wage introduced through sectoral determinations have also not been associated with significant job losses, with the exception of the agricultural sector following the 2012 increase in the farm worker minimum wage. Both in South Africa and internationally, evidence suggests that while there may be job loss initially, employment recovers over time. Whether employment will recover to the level seen prior to the introduction of minimum wages is very difficult to answer in general, as this will depend on the sector characteristics, the state of the economy, and other factors. A critical aspect of the proposed national minimum wage bill is the provision for any employer to apply for an exemption. This is the most important mediating factor in relation to the risk of job losses. Another is the employment tax incentive, which continues to operate to the benefit of young entrants to the labor market. This incentive could be utilized to obviate any negative effects to the employment absorption capabilities of enterprises. The second issue relates to the high rate of unemployment in the South African labor market. A number of submissions have commented on this feature, either as a way of criticizing the introduction of the national minimum wage or by raising the objection that the unemployed have not been consulted. And if they were consulted, they would say that they would be willing to work for any level of pay simply to receive some income. The introduction of the national minimum wage cannot be held hostage to the fact of high and systemic unemployment in South Africa. The intervention aims at those who are active in the labor market and do not have as a policy objective addressing unemployment per se. Active labor market policies are the ones that aim to assist the unemployed to re-enter the labor market. Clearly, the national minimum wage is not intended to make the problem of unemployment worse than it already is, but the real test of the impact of the national minimum wage will come after its implementation through careful monitoring and evaluation and evidence-based adjustments to the national minimum wage in future years. It may also be that the prospect of higher earnings may stimulate job seeking, especially among discouraged work seekers. With regard to the voice of the unemployed in the process of finalizing the national minimum wage, both the organized labor and community constituencies in NEDLAC, they aim to represent the interest of the unemployed. The department also commissioned research into how the national minimum wage might affect young people's labor market outcomes. One of the findings of the interviews and focus group discussions with unemployed youth was that a lower minimum wage for young persons was seen as unfair. The research uncovered substantial evidence of non-compliance with existing minimum wages and led the authors to conclude that a national minimum wage could also reduce the exploitative pay practices uncovered by this research. Dealing with the definitions in the National Minimum Wage Bill, the definition of worker as an employee defined in Section 1 of the BCAA is not the definition intended by the department, as has already been clarified in the media. A wider definition of worker is intended and is deliberately cast widely in order to cover all forms of employment and to avoid disputes as to whether or not the worker is an employee, and to prevent the contractual circumvention of the national minimum wage through disguised employment. As a response to some of the comments made, a revised definition to be included in the final bill defining worker as any person who works for another and who receives or is entitled to receive any payment for that work, whether in money or in kind. So that's the definition that will be in the bill. On the application of the National Minimum Wage Bill, the bill is intended to apply to all workers except those specified in Section 3, and this includes seafarers. With regards to comments about forestry and sawmill activities and whether they are included, where forestry activities include sawmill activities on a farm, this will be classified as secondary agriculture as referred to in the scope of application of the sector determination. The response to that, to amend Section 3 of the BCNA to read, this act except Section 41 does not apply to persons employed on vessels at sea in respect of which the Merchant Shipping Act 57 of 1951 applies, except the extent provided for in a sectoral determination and with the exception of the National Minimum Wage Act. So that's how, that is how the new provision is going to read in the new amendments, in the amendments that we're going to effect to the bill. The nature of national minimum wage, submissions have been made questioning whether commission earners and independent contractors will be affected by the national minimum wage as outlined in Section 4.2 of the bill. Our response is that the national minimum wage requires payment of a minimum wage for hours worked. Employers of commission earners will have to comply with this requirement and adjust commission payment when necessary. The intention is to amend the definition of worker to apply a wider definition, which will include independent contractors. Independent contractors will only be affected where their pay is below or at the minimum wage and where they work for another and are entitled to receive payment. The calculation of the wage. A number of comments have pointed to the need to retain the provision for deductions that are currently allowed in terms of the farm worker sectoral determination. The continuation of this sectoral determination is dealt with in the paragraphs below. Another comment on this section of the bill has been to point to the need for greater clarity, possibly by way of examples and schedule or guidelines about what deductions are allowable from the minimum wage. Our response is that the department will investigate whether there is any conflict between the current drafting of Section 5, in particular Section 5.1D, and other legislation making provision for deductions for medical aids and pensions or provident funds and any other statutory deductions. If appropriate, a further amendment will be made to provide greater clarity. On the annual review of the national minimum wage, there have been three common issues raised in relation to Section 6 of the National Minimum Wage Bill. The first is around public participation and public input to the National Minimum Wage Commission when it reviews the national minimum wage. The second issue relates to the power of the Minister of Labor in dealing with the recommendations of the Commission. And the third issue relates to the role of the Commission's recommendations in relation to the National Assembly. Our response is as follows. Three further amendments are proposed to Section 6 to take account of the public input. The amendments will be as follows. Section 6.2 will read as follows. The review report to the Minister must reflect any alternative views, including those of the public, in respect of any recommendations made in terms of subsection 1. This amendment will enable the National Minimum Wage Commission to decide when and how to seek public input and obliges the Commission to reflect those views in its report. Secondly, Section 6.4, if the Minister does not agree with or requires clarity in respect of the recommendations, the Minister may, in the prescribed manner, refer the report and recommendations back to the Commission to clarify or reconsider their recommendations. Asking the Commission to reconsider their recommendations is more appropriate than the instruction implied in the word alter. Three, Section 66A, table the report of the Commission with the amended Schedules 1 and 2 in the National Assembly. By tabling the report together with the schedules that will contain the adjusted minimum wages, the National Assembly will have sight of the background information considered and the deliberations of the Commission that will inform the annual adjustment. Conduct of the annual review. The section dealing with the conduct of the annual review reflects the broad areas that the Commission should promote and consider when carrying out the review. In doing so, it will be supported by the Secretariat, and it is envisaged that the Secretariat will table information on the areas identified in Section 7. These areas are not exclusive, and the Commission and Secretariat may well identify other information and evidence that will be required to inform the deliberations of the Commission during the review process. The Department is of the view that legislation should not outline every last detail of the information that should be considered, nor should it be too prescriptive to the Commission with regard to the annual review. On the National Minimum Wage Commission, the bill provides for the establishment, functions, and composition of the Commission. Read with the amendments to the BCEA, the Commission will take over many of the functions of the repealed Employment Standards Commission. The primary function of the Commission is to review the national minimum wage and to make recommendations annually for its adjustment. It has ancillary functions such as investigating the impact of the national minimum wage on the economy, collective bargaining and income differentials, and to report annually to the Minister. The Commission will set medium-term targets for the national minimum wage and must do so within a three-year period. The agreement between NEDLAC social partners makes reference to the use of appropriate benchmarks when the Commission sets medium-term targets. It is the Department's view that it is not necessary to specify this in the legislation. These are operational matters and details that the Commission and the Secretariat will be fully briefed on. On the exemptions and regulations, the bill provides for the Minister to grant exemptions from the national minimum wage, the exercise of which is to be regulated by regulations. The regulations must include the procedure for exemption, the obligation on employer to consult with employees or their trade unions, the criteria for evaluating exemptions, etc. The regulations have been drafted and an engagement in NEDLAC has been concluded. The design of an electronic exemption system is at an advanced stage, and testing of the system is planned to take place in the next few weeks. Many comments have highlighted the difficulties faced by certain sectors of the economy that may lead to dismissal. Our response to that is that it is important to note that the exemption system provides a remedy for employers who cannot afford to pay the national minimum wage, and it is expected that this will be utilized by the employers. The exemptions process will be made simple and transparent, and dismissals should not be required if the financial constraints facing an employer can be demonstrated. Most countries that have introduced a minimum wage makes provision for some exemptions, but these are usually targeted at particular categories. For example, youth or at particular sectors. South Africa may well be one of the only countries that will allow for exemptions for any employer, and individual small employers may obtain assistance of the employer organizations to which they belong. The department will consider a provision for a review of the exemption system that will most likely be incorporated in the regulations. On Schedules 1 and 2, the NEDLAC constituencies agreed that the farm worker and domestic workers that are currently on a tier of 90% and 75% of the national minimum wage should be brought up to 100% of the minimum wage level within 2 years. This is to be subject to research by the National Minimum Wage Commission on the time frames. The department will find an appropriate worded amendment to Section 2 of Schedule 1 to reflect the agreement, to reflect the NEDLAC agreement. On the Basic Conditions of Employment Amendment Bill and its policy objectives, the amendment to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act should be read alongside of the National Minimum Wage Bill. The two bills complement each other insofar as the BCA will continue to regulate basic conditions of employment and deal with monitoring, enforcement, and legal proceedings. The latter will also apply to enforcement of the national minimum wage. The policy objectives for government is to introduce a national minimum wage as a basic floor with collective bargaining varying and improving earnings above the national minimum. The system whereby wages have been regulated on a sector or traditional basis has resulted in a system that has considerable complexity. According to research undertaken for the Department of Labor, South Africa has more wage schedules attached to sectoral determinations than several other African countries. In 2015, there were 124 minimum wage schedules in South Africa, compared to 55 in Kenya, 32 in Namibia, and 1 in Ghana. The complexity of the sectoral determination system makes it difficult to understand for workers and small firms, in particular, and increases the likelihood of poor compliance. Introducing a national minimum wage provides an opportunity to simplify minimum wage regulation and improve compliance. This is a key consideration for government in proposing to phase out, I think that was the a typo there, Chairperson, to phase out or stop the new sectoral determination. In doing so, the department is guided by the International Labour Organization, which clearly advocates for simpler minimum wage system. The ILO suggests the following. While a system based on a single minimum wage may have the disadvantage of not reflecting the payment capacities of all employers across the country, it has the advantage of simplicity, which makes it easier for employers and workers to know the minimum wage rate application to a particular employment relationship and for the labor inspection services to enforce the relevant provisions. On the contrary, the more complex the minimum wage system is and the more sectoral, occupational, and geographical rates it involves, the more difficult it is to monitor, particularly in countries where the labor administration services have very limited resources. There are relatively few sector-specific conditions of employment contained in the sectoral determination that will be affected by the phasing out of the system of sectoral determination. We would like to refer the committee to Annex D and also make the following statement, that the department has no intention of phasing out the existing sectoral determination, but rather stop the development of new sectoral determinations. Stopping the development of new sectoral determinations provides a strong incentive for collective bargaining arrangement to take over from minimum wage regulations. This is already taking place in private security sector when application to register a bargaining council was launched during 2017. The following are particular areas of the BCE where a number of comments have been made and the response of the department to these comments. Committee members will recall that a number of people made submissions to the effect that we want to do away with sectoral determination or the provision in the amendments that we've deleted, which provided the minister with the powers to set a new sectoral determination. That's the only provision that has been taken out, but the existing sectoral determination will continue to exist as outlined in Annex D. On the application, a number of submissions by organizations in the fishing sector have pointed to the exclusion of seafarers or persons employed on vessels at sea from the application of the BCA. The conditions of employment are regulated by the Merchant Shipping Act 57 of 1951. These submissions have also called for an exclusion from the National Minimum Wage Bill. If you look at the Government Gazette that we issued on the 5th of January 2018 on this National Minimum Wage, The Bargaining Council for Deep Fishing. There's a schedule there which deals with the minimum deep sea rest periods, and it reads as follows. It says the employer shall provide an employee with at least 10 hours of rest per day, of which at least 6 hours of 10 hours shall be continuous uninterrupted rest when the employee is employed in the deep sea bottom troll sector. And also it reflects the minimum remuneration per hour per working day. So our response to the submissions on this application is that the NetLeg engagement highlighted the need to include seafarers within the scope of the National Minimum Wage Bill. This can be achieved by a further amendment to Section 3 of the BCA to include persons employed on vessels at sea in the scope of the National Minimum Wage, and to extend the application of sections of the BCA, such as Chapter 3, leave Chapter 4, which deals with particulars of employment and remuneration. So basically the whole area that deals with the core rights will also be extended to the seafarers. The daily wage payment, Section 9A is inserted, which provides that an employee who works for less than 4 hours on any day is entitled to be paid for 4 hours' work. This only applies to employees earning less than the threshold set by the Minister of Labor in terms of Section 6(3) of the BCA. Currently, is sitting at 205,444.30 per year. Provision to this effect are currently found in several sectoral determinations. A number of comments have been submitted on this amendment that mainly deals with clarification of the circumstances where the guaranteed minimum hours will apply. Some comments have also objected to the clause arguing that it should only apply to the minimum wage and those who earn the minimum wage. BUSA has raised two further points that were considered during the NetLeg process, but that have been omitted. These relate to the National Minimum Wage Commission investigating the feasibility of increasing the minimum to 5 hours and limiting the applicability to an earning ceiling of between 40 rands and 60 rands per hour to be determined by the Minister of Labor. Our response is as follows. The department is considering limiting the application of the guaranteed minimum hours to an hourly earning ceiling of between 40 rands or 60 rands per hour. This can be accommodated by amending Clause 9A2 to include the words "or as prescribed by the minister." The investigation by the National Minimum Wage Commission into the feasibility of raising the minimum hours to 5 need not be legislated, as it is required to advise the minister on any matter on which advice is requested. On the repeal of Chapter 8 and 9, the phasing out of sectoral determination is dealt with, as I've indicated above. By extension, so is the repeal of Chapter 9 that provides for the establishment of the Employment Conditions Commission. Most of the submissions on the BCA deal with this amendment and seek to retain sectoral determination. A 3-year transitional period is provided for in Section 20 of the BCA bill for sectoral determination. This should provide sufficient time in which to assess the continued need for sector-specific regulations of conditions of employment, including any wages that are higher than the national minimum wage. Should it be necessary, it add a further amendment to the National Minimum Bill to enable the National Minimum Wage Commission to take over the relevant functions of the Employment Condition Commission. This can be done. An amendment would add a function to those of the National Minimum Wage Commission to specify that it may advise the minister on any matter concerning basic conditions of employment. The department is also considering an amendment to the BCA Bill, Section 23, to read, for a period of 3 years from the commencement of the National Minimum Wage Act 2017, unless the minister, after consulting with NetLeg, prescribes a longer period. On the monitoring and enforcement and legal proceedings, many comments have been submitted on the amendments to Section 64 to 80 of the BCA that deal with enforcement, legal proceedings, and fines for non-compliance. The submissions express concern about the ability of the CCMA to deal with the expanded jurisdiction to arbitrate underpayment disputes in terms of the amendment to the BCA. Recommendations have also been made to make provision for an appeal process for employers in relation to compliance orders that are to be made arbitration awards in terms of the amendment to Section 69. Our response is that a number of further amendments to the relevant sections will be incorporated to improve on the legal proceedings. These amendments are highlighted in the submission by the CCMA, and drafting of the amendments has commenced. The department will also consider amended wording to Section 76A to make provision for fines to apply to employers who obtain an exemption but are found to have supplied false information. On the Labor Relations Amendment Bill, policy objectives, there are two major policy objectives contained in the amendments to the Labor Relations Act. The first is to strengthen collective bargaining, and the second relates to dealing with violent and protracted strikes. The way in which the bill deals with this is to change the representativeness requirements for the extension of collective agreements under Section 32.2. That section required both the trade union party to the agreement to represent the majority of employees, and that the members of the employer organization party to the agreement to employ the majority of employees within the scope of the agreement. The amendment now only requires one or the other. In order to promote collective bargaining at sectoral level and in accordance with the jurisprudence of the International Labour Organization, the operating principle underlying the extension of agreements is whether agreement applies to the majority of employees in the sector or scope of the agreement. In other words, the principle now is now one of coverage rather than strict representativeness. This is a significant shift which has been agreed to with the NEDLAC social partners and which will contribute to supporting collective bargaining arrangement and ensuring that conditions of employment and wages can be regulated in sectors where bargaining councils exist. The second objective is to be achieved by amendments that will prohibit a picket unless picketing rules are in place, by clarifying that a ballot means any system of voting by members that is recorded and secret, and by introducing an amendment that will provide for the establishment of an advisory arbitration panel to investigate a strike or lockout and to make an advisory award to assist the parties to resolve the dispute. With regard to both strengthening collective bargaining and dealing with violent and protracted strike action, it will be important to recognize the limits to the law and the extent to which it is able to change behavior. In this regard, the NEDLAC process has two further outcomes that will make important contribution to changing behavior over time. The Accord on the Collective Bargaining and Industrial Action commits social partners to take all steps necessary to prevent violence, intimidation, and damage to property, and improve the capacity of the social partners and other agencies to resolve disputes peacefully and expeditiously. A number of parties to bargaining councils have signed the accord, and further efforts will be made by the department and the NEDLAC social partners to advocate the accord and the commitments that it contains. The Code of Good Practice on Collective Bargaining, Industrial Action and Picketing provides practical guidance on collective bargaining, the resolution of disputes of mutual interest, and the use of peaceful industrial action and picketing processes. The code is to be published with the regulations to the Labor Relations Act, and further efforts will be made to provide training to the parties to collective bargaining arrangements and to advocate the use of the Code of Good Practice. The following are the main sections of the Labor Relations Bill where comments have been made, and the response of the department to these is as follows. On the extension of the bargaining council agreements, comments on the amendments to Section 32 of the Labor Relations Act are of two kinds. Those who oppose the amendments on the basis that they interfere with the majoritarian principle, and those who oppose them on the basis that the amendments may lead to abuse by minority parties to bargaining councils. The department responds as follows on those two issues. As indicated above, the amendment shifts the way in which representativeness is to be determined from considering the number of employees who are members of trade unions and the number of employees who are employed by employers that are members of employer organizations and that fall within the scope of a collective agreement. Once amended, the deciding factor will be whether there is a majority of employees covered by the agreement by either trade union membership or employment by members of employer organization. The majoritarian principle still applies, but to the number of employees covered by one of the parties to the agreement. Secondly, Section 30 of the Labor Relations Act requires the constitution of bargaining councils to make provision for equal representation by trade unions and employer organizations in the bargaining council. When deciding whether to request the minister to extend a collective agreement, Section 32.1 requires that there be a majority of the trade unions that are party to the council and one or more employer organizations whose members employ the majority of employees employed by employer organizations that are party to the council vote in favor of the extension of the collective agreement. These requirements would rule out the possibility of abuse by minority parties to a bargaining council. The only amendment that provides for minority party to request that a collective agreement be renewed or its period of operation extended is the new section 32A, which talks about renewal and extension of funding agreements. This amendment seeks to address a situation where parties to a council cannot agree to extend or renew a collective agreement that provides for funding to a council, pension or provident fund agreement, medical aid and other funding agreements. The amendment makes provision for the minister to renew and extend a funding agreement for up to 12 months at the request of any of the parties to the bargaining council. On the CCMA and accreditation of bargaining council panelists, a number of submissions, including by bargaining councils, have objected to the amendments to Section 127 and 128 of the Labor Relations Act, especially Section 128. The amendments provide that a council or private agency may apply for the accreditation or the accreditation of its dispute resolution panel. The amendment to Section 128 requires that an accredited bargaining council or private agency may only appoint a person to resolve a dispute if that person is accredited by the governing body of the commission. To this, we respond as follows. The amendments are introduced to ensure that persons appointed have the requisite qualification and experience to resolve disputes. The intention of the Labor Relations Act is to ensure that the CCMA is the standard setter for dispute resolution. The amendment is aimed at giving effect to this by formalizing authority of the governing body to accredit panelists of bargaining councils. The accreditation of councils and panelists is not intended to interfere with self-governance of a council's dispute resolution process, but it will require panelists to be accredited and qualified according to the standards set by the CCMA. The CCMA have proposed a further amendment to Section 130 of the LRA to deal with the withdrawal of accreditation of bargaining councils and private agencies, including the withdrawal of panelists' accreditation. On the advisory arbitration panel in the public interest, as contained in Section 158 to 150E, the response to the introduction of an advisory arbitration panel to assist parties in resolving strikes or lockouts that are intractable, violent, or that may cause a local or national crisis has generally been positive. Some have called for the right for a party to approach the labor court for an interdict, declaring a strike unprotected where there is violence and intimidation during a strike. Others have raised more technical issues relating to the operation of an advisory panel in the public service. The department has made a number of editorial corrections to the cross-referencing in the sections 158 to E and would like to introduce a further amendment to Section 150C dealing with advisory arbitration award. The amendment will require the employer's organization or trade union party to a dispute to conduct a secret ballot of its members prior to rejecting an advisory arbitration award. The conduct of a ballot should be in accordance with its constitution. This we refer to as second ballot, was not agreed to in the NEDLEG engagement. But the department is of the view that it is appropriate to make provision for this ballot given the potential consequences of rejecting an award and thereafter continuing with strike action or a lockout that would already have been characterized by violence, intimidation, and damage to property. Honorable Chairperson and the honorable members, that is our response to few of the issues that we have picked up. As I indicated earlier on, this is not our comprehensive report to or response to a whole number of issues that have been raised. In due course, we will provide that response to the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. We'll give over to the members for... Remember, members, we are not going to deliberate on the content. What we're going to do is we're going to add on those issues that we feel hasn't been brought forward or highlighted by the department, and the time for deliberations will come. I'm open for hands. I see the Honorable Begram, then I see the Honorable Muteka and the Honorable Mashile in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the department for doing this in such a great hurry and short time, so thank you very much for it. I have noted what the chairperson said, and I agree with that entirely. We're not going to comment on the points raised by the department because we need time to study, and in fact, you've just said it. You're going to highlight further points yourself. You're going to be redrafting the legislation. Many of the points you've said you're going to go back to. So this is just an interim report on your initial thoughts, and we thank you for that interim report. I presume that when and if you get to this redrafting of the legislation, you will send it to Mr. Zakasa in due course, and that will be then distributed, and you'll be obviously updating a report and sending that to us as well. So yes, it is wrong for us to even try and comment on this. Not that I can, because we've just had some insight into it. But yes, I can understand this is going to be an unfortunately long process where you need to, we've got to go back to the drawing board, as it were. Even the actual initial shire that we're aiming at is now going to be changed. I don't know if you've put any thoughts to it as to whether you're going to go back and consult at NEDLAC and send it back to them. Maybe you want to comment on that. And whether, in fact, you obviously you have spoken to the CCMA with regard to their input, because you've said you're going to change things. And I presume you're going to do that consultation with them as well as to when it can be. What you haven't done is, and maybe you want to do that in your next report, is you heard from each one of the people that had input. They were very worried about compliance and oversight and whatever, and whether there was an ability for their department to be able to, even once we've been through this long process and you've now got law, maybe you want to comment on that, not now, but in your next report. So thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me that opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Begram. You indicated that you've jotted down previously some areas that you feel that needs to be responded to. Are you reserving that for later?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, of course, because I don't know what they're going to give me in the final report. I feel they've left out, from my initial look at it, half a dozen issues, and I feel also they haven't had a careful look at all the responses. I suspect they're going to now start handling all of that as well. So thank you.
Okay. Honorable Muteka.
Thank you, Jefferson. I want to take the department to page 5, where they talk of what or how much is relevant to feed a family, where they took off 3.3% households and all that. And I want to remind them that EPWP workers are also human beings that have got families to be fed. So in their descriptions, they must be included. What do we call them if they are not workers? And again, do we exclude the stats? In the stance of job creation, do we exclude EPWP workers? So, At which grounds are we exempting government from practicing what we expect from the rest? I mean, it is there on page 5. It is from you. And these people are earning less than 1,000 rand downwards. What are we thinking about those people? Are they not having families to be fed and all those things? So that's one of the reasons why I said there are some people that were excluded out of the whole exercise or were undermined. And we need to revisit and review the whole thing and put them in. Because we don't buy, CFF, we don't buy this thing of EPWD are not workers and all that. We don't buy that. Because at the end of the day, these people, you hire them so that they can put something on the table for their families. But you still go below the poverty level. I don't know what you call the 11 rand thing. Not saying I'm agreeing with the 20 rand level and all that, but I'm talking about, I'm talking to the West. And again, Chairperson, the another reason why they have to redraft the whole bill is that there is a category which is missing, a category of workers which is missing, or I can call it a sector which is missing. And I imagine it the day the minister was in a meeting, the community caregivers. They are not. We don't want after May. After May, then we start fighting the war that we could have fought now, when they are not there and looted and all that. We are saying community caregivers, the CCGs. That's how they call them in the KZN, and countrywide we call them community-based health care workers. These people are also workers. They are not treated like other workers in the hospitals and everywhere. So we want them to be included in this package so that we know where do you put them. So if we're not happy, we know what to do. If we're happy, we also appreciate. To my understanding, the minimum wage, national minimum wage, should be the living wage. So, I've read the submission from COSATU and FEDUS and the other friend of them, NACTU, that they know that national minimum wage is not the living wage. So if no one can live with it, why do you take the whole process to go through through it? It must at least be the beginning where we say with this minimum, a family can be fed. That's what I call a living wage. The other thing that you must consider when you do the redrafting is the issue of the workers who are earning more than what we are setting on the national minimum wage. How are we going to protect them from being retrenched and be rehired so that they can come down to the national minimum wage, which will be much more lower than them for the same job? Because I know of some companies in Jimston where they hire new temporary workers but retrenching at the same time. Just after they know we are busy with these things, so we must also check that. How are we going to protect these people that I'm retrenched today? After 2 months, I'm getting hired. I was earning 80 rand an hour. Now I'll be set at 20 rand an hour. How are we going to protect such thing? So we must consider that when we do the whole thing. I think so far I'm fine, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka. Honorable Mashile.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm just exploiting the opportunity of being a new member. The likelihood of being called out of order or that we have already discussed, it may not happen to me. actually, I'm just pleading that if what I'm raising has been raised before, and then you'll just pardon me. Because I only arrived less than 24 hours, yeah.
No, Honorable Mashile, I think you are protected.
Okay, thanks very much. Actually, I just wanted to understand the trend of the submissions, starting from the time at the department, at the executive level, when we were dealing with this, then to the submissions that may have been made at NEDLAC, and the submissions that you are meeting now today on the parliamentary process. Are we having majority of submissions repeating themselves? Although it may change in context, you know, it's given the responses that they may have had, but in terms of the interested parties, those that you met at the departmental level, and those that made representation at NEDLAC, and those that have made here, are you seeing any pattern? Do they repeat themselves, or is there any significant change at any on the three levels? That's what I just wanted to get that particular picture, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. Honorable Martins.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the content advisor for giving us an overview and the department as well. The department there said that this is the initial input, and later they'll come back with more elaborate input. My little experience in Parliament, at times closer to the end of this type of process, what departments would do is to give us what the department has given us today in a narrative form that we can follow, but then also come up with a copy that's in a tabular form. Then the first column would have the entity, organization, trade union submission that they've made, and then very briefly what's the nub of the issues that they raise and what is the response of the department. Then when members have this, it makes engagement and exposition much more easier. Thank you.
That's a good proposal, Honorable Martins. We'll give to the department to respond to the views raised and questions.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the last one. Honorable Martins will do exactly that. That was the intention. That's why we indicated that this is an interim report. We haven't had time to develop that metrics. Our team is busy with that work as we speak, so that's what we'll submit to the committee. Honorable Mashele asked a question relating to the pattern or patterns with regards to the issues that have been raised during the interactions that we've had with the members of the public. What we've picked up is that there are quite a number of things that are similar. Issues that were raised during our interactions and the issues that were submitted either in writing or oral to the committee and to us, mostly they are similar. And there are very few that are new things. And these are things that we're most familiar with, given the interactions we've had with the public. And that's why in this submission we indicated the process that we followed with regards to where we come from with these bills, leading to where we are now. So there has been an extensive consultation, extensive engagement, and we're currently running roadshows, and certainly there are a number of things that we may pick up during the interaction that we're having now with the organized labor employers. So we'll take those also into consideration. The issue relating to EPWP, it's been a contentious issue from the beginning of this process, and if you look at the genesis of the EPWP concept, it was a skills development program. It was never an intention to provide full employment to people, and that's why there's a ministerial determination which excludes a certain application of the provisions that you'll find in your normal sectoral determination or your normal basic conditions of employment, so as to facilitate that the skills transfer and the training program. But of course, they had to be provided with what we call a stipend, and that's why they're being paid. We refer to it as a stipend. And I don't think that we've had the last of this discussion with regards to EPWP. It's going to rage on, and we're listening, and all what we want to make sure as a Department of Labor is to ensure that everybody who works is protected by the law. And we have to listen carefully, and if the committee says otherwise, we will do whatever the committee says. That's why we brought the law here to the lawmakers to help us with closing the gaps that we may have left open during this during the discussions at NEDLAC or during the drafting of the bills. The community caregivers, they were here, and it is one of the things that we have not responded to in the document. What we're intending to do is to do exactly what Honorable Martins has proposed, to have that matrix with the name of the organization, the issues that they have raised, and our response to those issues. So in due course, we will provide a response to the questions relating to community caregivers. Well, on the issue of a minimum wage should be a living wage, I think that it's a we may discuss this up until the I don't know, because we hold different views, and we said from the very beginning that our intention with this bill is to make sure that we don't undermine collective bargaining. If government sets a living wage for workers, we are of the opinion that it will go a long way in undermining the collective bargaining, because the labor relations is based on two things. One, government setting a minimum floor of rights and a strong collective bargaining system. So if we take away that, if government becomes a shop steward and take away all those powers of unions to engage with employers, we then killing the collective bargaining and trade unionism in this in this country. So, and yes, there's a difference between a minimum wage and a living wage, and we want unions to engage with employers to get a living wage. Our role as government is to set a minimum floor below which no worker should be paid, and I think we move from that premise as a Department of Labor. On the issue of workers earning, I sense the question was relating to workers earning beyond the threshold. Above the threshold, above the minimum wage, above 20 rands. Well, workers earning above 20 rands are already protected by the law. The basic conditions of employment protects them, and if there's a sectoral determination that applies to that sector, it protects them, and if there's a collective bargaining agreement that applies to that sector, it protects them. So we already have legal protection for those employers, for those workers. So you already have it there in the legislation. I thought you was talking about workers that are earning beyond the threshold. The honourable member was referring to the possible displacement effects of the bill when he talks about people being retrenched and then in some instances rehired, rehired. Those are the things that we need to guard against as a department. And also, we're relying here on the goodwill of South Africans. Employers are South Africans. That they must not do anything that's against the law. If they do anything that's against the law, those employees must come and talk to the Department of Labor. They must go to the CCMA. If they feel that they've been unfairly treated, like I said, there's already legal provisions in the law that protects those workers. Mm-hmm. So we will apply the letter of the law as soon as we know about those situations.
Already regulate the issues around retrenchment. If an employee is retrenched and then re-employed at a lower level, that's an indication that that retrenchment was not necessary in the first place. Therefore, the employee has got to challenge the retrenchment itself when an employer does that. There's protection. Now, if an employer reduces, retrench people, dismiss people, re-employ them at a lower rate, doing the same job, it's an indication that that dismissal in itself was unfair. There was no need for the dismissal. You've got to challenge the dismissal itself. And if you look at the section 189, I mean, the new section that deals with the 3 months, you know, it deals with this issue of the regulation of labor broking. It deals with this issue where workers are likely to be dismissed, to be re-employed tomorrow, or to be re-employed as new, and the Act already talks to that. And also the issue that we're making an unfair labor practice for employer to reduce hours of work. I mean, we could see a situation where you're earning now above 20 rand. An employer saying to you that, well, we're now reducing your wages to 20 rand because the minimum wage says 20 rand. And that's the reason that the unfair labor practice is put in that section to protect the reduction of working hours, specifically working hours, to reduce the spec of working hours for workers who are earning above the minimum wage. Therefore, there is enough protection that already exists in law and the others that we're proposing in terms of those issues.
Thank you to DG and the department. I think we are covered in terms of the today's discussions. So, Honorable Muteka.
Just one follow-up. I think somewhere I was understood, and partially understood. I was talking about the employee who is now operating a machine or whatever, getting paid, for example, 60 rand an hour. and then he's getting retrenched. 3 months along the line, or 4 months along the line, he's rehired. He's now a new employee. And then it is now put on what the law requires, I mean, allows. It says 20 rand an hour. Because there's nothing now that will force an employer to take this person back to 80 rand. Remember that he earned that along the years.
Honorable Muteka.
But I want them to understand so that they can respond.
Oh, I thought they understood it like that and they did respond accordingly. Unless you are not satisfied with the response that they've given. But they refer to relevant sections in different.
That's why I'm saying
legislation.
Give me a space. I've dealt with this for 19 years, ma'am. I know how things are happening down there. I'm saying this act they are talking about. They are covering this person at the moment. But now this person is new, is rehired as a new person. And then there's nothing that will say this person has to earn 80 rand because he was earning 80 rand before. Because there's nothing in the legislation that says this machine raised this much. He earned that 80 rand over the years in order to reach there. So I think that's why I'm saying somewhere, I don't know how they are professionals, they know how to do these things. Somewhere they must insert that an employer cannot retrench a person any a higher rate than it is stipulated on the national minimum wage, and later on bring that person back to that. That's what I'm talking about. At least there must be something in the bills. They, as experts, they'll know how to put it.
Honorable Mashile?
Yeah, Chairperson, just two things. I think the table that Honorable Martins has spoke to, then there should be consideration of actually attaching the relevant section in the bill. That particular section that we talk about applies to, so that you are able to link to the bill as well. I think if they can just add that. And then I think Honorable Mteka should be given an opportunity also just simply to look at the bill. And we are the lawmakers now. This bill is actually in our hands now. It's in our hands. It's no longer in the executive. It's no longer in NEDLAC. It has passed those stages. It is now in our hands here in Parliament. They are just assisting us, but also even ourselves. If you can just look at the bill when he's at home and then try and see where you can slot that particular clause that he's talking about, and then so that you can come and talk to it, and then the lawyers here, then they'll tell us what is the implication of that particular proposal that he's making. And then we'll deliberate, and then the department will assist us as well is by coming up with the relevant section of a number of pieces of legislation that talks to that. And if we are satisfied that it covers that, then we throw the proposal away. And if we are sure that it is not covered, then we will tend to agree or modify or whatever so that it becomes legal. And I think that is the job that we have of actually making this laws. I think that is what I'll just propose, that if we can get a draft and then as a political party and come with it for us to concede. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. I think we should just take note of the fact that Honorable, as the other members, we have already received all the bills. But Honorable Mashile was not yet with us, so we'll just request the administration just to to give him also the advantage of having all the relevant documentation in terms of what we have handled in this process. So, DG, do you want to wrap up just, or are you just noting? Thank you. You are just noting, and you'll come back with the further responses. Honourable members, we are actually done with our agenda. Just to wrap up, I've been in consultation. You've seen me going up and down, moving in and out. So I've been in consultation with the principals of Parliament, and I would formally request the proposals in terms of the way forward to be formalized, so that we can just get an agreement as the committee on this matter. So, Honourable Teko, can you just formally propose again, and then give the opportunity to the other parties also to comment, just to wrap up this issue.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Lerato Teko. On behalf of ANC, I propose that on the week of the 10th until the 13th, as a PC on Labour, we come and meet and discuss the matter. So I move, Chair.
We are noting, thank you, Honorable Teko. We are noting Honorable Moteka. Do we have a second on that proposal first? Honorable Tongwani seconding, Honorable Moteka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to reiterate what I've said before. As the EFF, we are not in a hurry, and we are against the fast-tracking of the whole thing and leaving the very important submissions and issues outside. So let's see each other after constituency growth. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Moteka. There's still two views on that table. One has been seconded. Can we get further input from Honorable Begram?
Yeah, we reiterate again, we're not going to be here during the constituency period. You keep calling it the vacation or whatever, some other name. It's a constituency period. We have to be working in our constituencies. And what you're suggesting is that we don't work in our constituencies, that we in fact come here and only to save 1 week, when we in fact far down the line, in the sense of we haven't even got a bill yet. It's going to be redrafted. We don't have one. So I'm not even sure why we're coming back. I have a suspicion that even when we do come back after the 17th, that things won't be finalized for us to actually properly debate it. But we wait and see to see exactly how that's going to be done. We're going to have a redrafted bill. I don't know how long they're going to take with that. But we're not going to be here. It doesn't look like the EFF is going to be here. So in essence, what you're going to have, because no one else is here, you're going to have the ANC and the department discussing a half-baked bill. And I'm not sure to what purpose. So thank you for listening to us.
Thank you, Honorable Begram, for that one. According to my principles, the majority of the parties agreed on that week to meet. So therefore, there is two views on the table. Both are seconded. Can we then put the matter to vote, Honourable members? Those in favour of the first proposal by Honourable Teko, can they raise their hands? Thank you, Honourable members. Those in favour of the second proposal by Honourable Teko, by Honourable Moteka. Thank you. We voted on the matter.
Could I just, on the point of order, Madam Chair, we are not compelled to be here during that time. And you cannot force us to be here because you want to meet, because you are pressured by your principles. So we are simply just not going to be here because we are not compelled to be there. There is no compulsion on us to be here. It's voluntary.
Honourable America. I don't want to open this matter, but Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm just picking up that I think we have got a difference of understanding why we are here in Parliament. And then I think this just needs to be looked at and engaged. We are members of Parliament, we are lawmakers, and when we have to actually do this particular piece of legislation for the country, then it is our primary activity. And then now, I understand the sentiments of Bahrain, but he's not helping us. He's not helping us because he expects the department to come with a redrafted bill, whereas it is us in the deliberations that must inform that redrafted bill. The department cannot go and sit and redraft the bill. They've drafted the bill, and then it has gone through whatever it has gone. It is here now. It is us now that must inform them. Even these recommendations that the department has just read now here, it is us to agree to them that they are correct, or we can even amend them before they go and redraft the bill. Therefore, our coming back in the week of 10 to 13 will assist the department to get closer to a redrafted bill. But if we don't come back, whenever we're going to come back on the later week, that is exactly what we are still going to start afresh before we even see the redrafted bill. Then why do you then delay ourselves unnecessarily? And then I think that's what I just wanted to put, because I felt that he expects the department to redraft the bill before we deliberate. And there is no way that the department can do that. There is no way that the department can do that. They are actually waiting for us on clause by clause that we are agreed that it must be changed, it must be added, and then all the agreed clauses, the A list that they are going to produce is the one that is going to inform the redrafted bill. And we must assist them to do that. If we don't assist them to do that, they're just going to wait with all this until we do that. Therefore, the sooner we do it, the better. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile, Honorable Muteka, and then Honorable Martens. Then we wrap up with this matter.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think partially I want to agree with Honorable Mashile. We are all here to work. That is true. And the only thing that I'm against is this issue of fast-tracking, whereas you can hear there is still lots and lots of things that we have to deal with. Even when we come back after the constituency period, we are going to do exactly what Honorable Mashile is saying. And then the department will do their work. The problem is this thing of pushing. This pushing thing, I told you, it even compromised the input of COSAT of Fidus and NEGTU. It is stated there in their own submission that due to pressure of time, we couldn't resolve on 1, 2, 3. And now you want to bring it here. It's not going to happen. We feel, as EFF, we feel the workers are going to get more harm than business in this thing. That's what we say. So our difference with DA is that they have their own explanation. My explanation, I'm saying the workers will be more harmed when you go through the whole thing. So at its state form, I cannot agree for any speed.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka. Your views as well as the views of all the other members are noted, but we've counted the votes and the majority is in favor of the first proposal by Honorable Teko. So we will make the application then for approval, and the members will receive the notices accordingly. Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would just state that there is a political backstory to this proposal. You have caucuses, and they by hook or by crook, you're going to approve it today. There's, I don't know if there's a relationship between a possible rising of Parliament on the 31st of May, and then we need to have these bills approved before then because there might be an early election. But there's certainly an agenda, and we cannot buy into that agenda. So I want to put it on record that we will consult our principles, and we stated quite categorically that we are not going to be here, and you can meet next week as the ANC and go through the process, because we're not going to be on the 10th either.
Thank you. Honorable Martins, can you wrap up?
Chair, you have made a ruling, so I'm not sure what's the relevance of what I'm going to say. I will say it nevertheless. My understanding earlier on, when you left the meeting to say that you are going to consult, as I said, I speak under correction. My understanding was not that you are going to consult the ANC in regard to this matter. My understanding was that you are going to seek guidance from the parliamentary authority. Parliamentary authority in the sense that there's a Chief Whip's Forum. And I thought that the guidance you were seeking was from there, for them to discuss the possibility of members reconvening on the 10th, and you come back with guidance from them, whether the Chief Whip's Forum has agreed or not. I thought that's the advice that you went to seek. So as I say, I speak under correction. I do not know who you went to see. And where we are at present, the committee has come to some decision. But thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Martins. Honorable Begum, I want to close this matter, please.
I'm happy for you to close it, but I just need to know who you did speak to, in fact, and whether the Chief Whip's Forum did meet. I presume they haven't met, and I presume you want to make some sort of application to them. Can we have a copy of that application that you're going to send to them? We'd like to see it just in case you're telling them something that we haven't agreed on. And I presume you will say that the other parties will not be present on those dates, but the ANC wants to be here. And I will presume you'll be honest with them and you'll let us have a copy of it. So thank you.
Honourable members, we are not going to entertain this matter further. As I indicated, as the acting chairperson, I did not communicate or liaise with the ANC. I indicated to you I'm going to liaise with the principals of Parliament, and that's exactly what I did. And can you allow me to finish, Honourable America? So, as a matter of fact, I received the feedback that it has been deliberated in the Chief Whip's Forum and it has been agreed to there. So hence, we are taking this matter forward and we're concluding in that fashion. The application will be made and then the members will receive the notices accordingly. This meeting will therefore be adjourned.
Another point of order, Madam Chair. Can you provide us with a proof, because we would have got a notification if our chief would agree to it, because we had a meeting this morning and they categorically took a position.
But Honorable Muteka, that's what I exactly said. We need to respect each other. Because whilst I've been speaking, I've allowed you to deliberate as members. And then when I have the opportunity to respond to your concerns, you don't want to give me the opportunity, Honorable America. And it's extremely out of order. And I want to put that on record, that it's not fair that the chair is disregarded in that fashion. has allowed all the members, and I'll refer all the members, therefore, to their political principles to deal further with this matter. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.